The following is a presentation of the Control Trends Podcasting Network.
Welcome to Control Talk Now, your smart buildings podcast with Ken Smyers and Eric Stromquist. Control Talk Now, your source for control news you can use. And now, here is Eric.
Welcome to episode 316 of Control Talk Now, your video cast and podcast for the week ending May 19th. 2019. Kenny Smyers, we are not in Kansas anymore. Where the heck are we?
Eric, we're a long way from Kansas. We are in Amsterdam, Netherlands, and we are standing in front of the marvelous Johan Cruyff Arena, where the AFC Ajax soccer football team plays in a very important game tomorrow. But until tomorrow, we are here at the EZIO conference, the World Conference 2019, and it's just been a marvelous reception last night, and we got a big program to talk about.
Well, we do have a big program to talk about, man. If you can't be here, we're sorry. Ken, I keep saying, man, this is our fifth global conference. It's one of the greatest conferences ever. EZIO has great products, so it's a great, they've got the perfect blend of mixing in some great technical information with integrators from all around the world, plus some great entertainment. My guess is, if it's like any of the other conferences, tomorrow afternoon the man, the myth, the legend will be kicking soccer balls on the field today, because they'll probably take us in tomorrow. So it's going to be good stuff. But Kenny, man, what's your take on the conference so far?
Well, last night we got to see people coming in from four different continents, and the EZIO product platform has evolved again into a new concept. It's going to be a pacesetter again. It's IT standard controller. It's not about the BAS having a front end as much as a controller. It's IT ready. So it's an IT ready BAS controller.
That's really, really cool. So, man, we're catching up with the gang, Mike Marston, Lim Hood Chat, SK Fu. But then again, man, what's so, so exciting is, man, this company is global. The platform works all across the planet. So it's going to be really, really good stuff. And looking forward to it. Like I said, we crank up tonight with an opening reception. And then tomorrow, we hop into the program. But, hey, Kenny, we have a jet going overhead.
Yeah, it doesn't have an effect on the sound, does it?
It does have an effect on the sound, but hey, they do have jets in Holland, so I'm pretty impressed by that. But we've had a good time so far, man. The people in the Netherlands and Amsterdam are super, super friendly. We've been around the city. Rick Jones is here from the U.S., so is Frank Wibner from Brody Precision,
right.
Jim Stiber from CCI, right. So more and more Americans are showing up for this conference, which is a really, really cool thing. But hey, Kenny, a couple weeks ago, we had a chance to catch up with a very, very fascinating individual, Michael Jansen from City Zenith. And before we introduce him, sort of set the frame a little bit. What was your take on City Zenith?
Well, he's a fabulous repertoire of experience. He was a prodigy as a student, studied architect, engineering, and art. And in fact, he went to China, lived there for several years, and then went to India. And he went back to back through the growth stages of these, you know, countries that had gone through, you know, kind of a, you know, generating into a first world power and taking technology at the level of artistic value and engineering and architectural value. So they do a lot of BIM modeling. He did a lot of graphicals, a lot of presentations. But now they actually are going to work in our space. They're going to work with master systems integrators and take their technology in a modular level that can work with any building. Any building in the world can now take advantage of this technology.
Right. And listen, when people talk about digital twins, they're not talking about me and Kenny. They're talking about a different concept. So totally listen to this interview. I think you're going to enjoy it, and we'll catch you on the flip side.
And Kenny, Ayn Rand might know our next guest. He is studying his bio. I'm sort of blown away by this guy. We are so happy to have him on the show. So Kenny, how about introducing him?
I'd love to, Eric. We are going to speak with Michael Jansen. He's the chairman and chief executive officer at City Zenith. But this guy is an amazing person. He's an impassioned architect, urbanist, and entrepreneur. He has been around the world a couple of times. He's been on television. He's been on all the smart stuff, Forbes, Business Week, Smart Cities Today, Government Technology, Future Gov Asia. I mean, this guy, he brings it to the table. Welcome to the show, Michael Jansen.
Welcome, Michael.
Thanks for having me very much. It's good to be here, and thanks for having me along.
Oh man, we're so thrilled. And you were actually the founder of City Zenith too, right? Am I correct with that? Did you found the company?
That's right. I founded the company almost 10 years ago.
Well, walk us through that, because again, like Kenny said, we'll put a link to your LinkedIn bio. It is a fascinating story, but why don't we pick the story up with you're sitting around one day and say, yeah, I think I'm going to found this company called City Zenith. What had you do?
Right, sure. So, well, I mean, you touched on it slightly in my bio. I'm an architect by training. And I studied at both the Yale School of Architecture as well as the Cambridge School of Architecture. So I went from New Haven to England in the late 80s and kind of got my first taste of the rest of the world, as it were. And kind of in style, I was a young architect at Cambridge, and our professors were sending us around to learn as much as we could about Europe. And I got exposed through a colleague at Cambridge to the very first ever glimpse of 3D technology in this space. We had one student in the department in 1989 who was experimenting with 3D technology, and he became my best friend. And believe it or not, he was almost an outcast in those days. He did to using a computer, you know, to dine. It was sacrilegious. Fast forward a few years, I moved from I was kind of part of the big, as a young architect, the big Asian tiger boom of the 90s. I moved to right out of Yale and Cambridge, straight into Asia, moved to China, and began working on these massive, you know, city scale urban developments, you know, as a 22 year old, and did that for a few years in a really exciting time in China when it was just beginning to make plans for what it later became. And then I was given an opportunity right in the mid 90s to kind of take a pause and go to India. I received a Fulbright scholarship to move from India to, I'm sorry, from China to India and to study architecture there. So my foundation is very much a traditional architect. I'm used to drawing things using a parallel rule. The difference was that by the mid 90s, when I entered the profession, CAD was taking off. So I was that first generation of CAD users in the big firms. And in my first big firm, I was the young guy who was told, learn the software, you're going to start, you know, drafting for us, and et cetera, et cetera. And so my career was somewhat coincident with the rise of technology in the profession. Fast forward a few years, I continued to stay on in India, moving from one large firm to an even larger firm, where I opened a South Asian office for them and really kind of set us in motion. And by the 2003-04 timeframe, as India was really starting to take off kind of economically, I founded a company. First time I actually ever ventured to do that, I founded a company called Satelier. And it was a CAD and 3D BIM services provider that provided these services to CAD and 3D modeling services to the architecture profession around the world. We started off with two clients, and by 2008-09, we had 400 clients, 30 top 50 in the world, Sequoia Capital, famous investors in Google and Yahoo and YouTube and all these companies invested in us. And we really grew the company beautifully. And it taught us a lot about the power of 3D object modeling technology to be able to make data easier to access, easier to work with, if you could really harness it. And so here we are, kind of, sorry for the bit of a ramp up there, but you know, you're sitting on the fire in 2009. Yeah, here we are, 2009. I'm in New Delhi with a gentleman who happens to be a personal friend. That personal friend of mine is now the national director, the director of the National Institute of Urban Affairs in India. He kind of rose to the country's top position in smart cities thinking. He was my buddy. He and I used to just get together at 11 o'clock at night and talk about, you know, how we were going to change the world with technology. And I had just exited one company, and I had bought this little company called ScreenPoint, which was a 3D modeling company that was the beginning of City Zenith. It was a nugget. It was four guys in San Francisco that came out of George Lucas's Industrial Light and Magic Studio to build a company that did kind of like what we do today. They were way too early. They were way too crazy, way too bold. But we have record of the first inklings of this going back to 2000 and the first real instance of what you call 5D technology in like 2005-06. So, I mean, 5D technology is simply taking these 3D models that were getting popular as presentation tools, show off my project, you know, show off my building, and adding data to them to use them as operational and in performance enhancement tools. And that's what ScreenPoint really wanted to do. And I sat with the old CEO, and this is around the fire back then, and said, hey, what if I buy your company? We try to go do this thing together.
Nice.
So within 3 months, I bought his company. And he said, you know, I'm not a great CEO, but I have a great idea. Can you please be CEO and take this thing? You know, if you don't mind raising an adopted child, take it from me and grow it. So, you know, we started on that journey then. You know, there were version after version. The very first team, because I had this background with Sequoia Capital and this track record in the industry, I hired the team that created Google Earth right out of Google to get started. It was a real major win. The French engineer, Rémi Arnaud from Paris, joined our company in 2009 and helped us build version one. So we had great technology DNA from early on. And Rémi helped us take our idea and turn it into the beginning of a product, basically gamifying it. He taught us that, you know, to do what you want to do, we have to gamify, you know, we have to turn this thing into a video game of some kind. Nice. So that way we can stream it over the web. We can do all kinds of exciting things with it as a product if everyone get their hands on it. So fast forward, we did version two and version three. We had all these people join the company from AECOM, from Revit, from these players that kind of added to what finally became the release that we had in last year called Smart World Pro. And that's the one that the market has taken to and has us working on cities, entire portfolios, massive infrastructure projects. All that's happening right now with the product. So it's been quite a journey, Eric.
Yeah, and Michael, listen, I just got to hop in right and say, you know, we got people, most people we know that do this kind of stuff are talking about making data usable. You're saying not only will we make it usable, we'll make it fun. That's a whole nother level, right, with the gamifying. I love that. Well, we saw you 2 years ago. We were just blown away. We had the great pleasure of meeting you and seeing your product. It was RealCom IBCon, wasn't it, Kenny, or was it?
I believe so.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know, we're just totally blown away by it. So, you know, I think what is exciting to me is it sounds like you guys are going to take this technology that you guys have been using to do cities and large campuses, and it seems like you're trying to open that up now to, you know, people at the building level, our community of master systems integrators. Is that a correct statement?
That's right. Now, I think what we did was we've been canvassing the real estate market, the commercial real estate market, to say, where is the real opportunity for digital twin technology, which is really what we do.
Well, you know,
what we discovered is that buildings have, please.
No, Michael, the only thing is that with our community, stable datum thing, the digital twin, we wanted to talk about that in that trend, but what is the digital twin? Before we make some of our folks might need a deeper dive into what a digital twin does for them.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And, you know, it's a new technology. It's a term that's being tossed around mostly a lot in the last year or so, although it's been around for maybe 15, 20 years. I mean, at a high level, a digital twin is a virtual replica of physical building assets, whether those are buildings, infrastructure, whatnot, connected to the data in and around them. That's what a digital twin is. They get used for various reasons, to inventory data that doesn't otherwise connect, intercommunicate, interoperate, the common use case. They're used to then optimize ultimately performance as well as to eventually predict outcomes. And the idea is that if you can bring all the data together, which is now in different siloed systems, into one common environment, we can begin to run new scenarios and predict new outcomes that we were perhaps not able to before. So a systems integrator does, in our mind, you know, a big part of the heavy lift required for a digital twin. Connecting the BMS systems and sensors inside the building back, and that's an important, you know, importance of layer in the digital twin itself. So I would say that while people may not be familiar with the term digital twin, they've been an important part of it. If you're a systems integrator already, just by nature, if you're in that business.
Very, very cool. Yeah.
Is that helpful?
Very, very much so. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Of course, the BIMS background kind of all ties in, right? Because that's essentially what it's an outgrowth of BIMS, essentially, it sounds like.
It is. I think for BIM, there's been a long talk about BIM to FM. How do you take the BIM model and turn it into kind of an asset management piece? And the attempts, in my view, to take existing proprietary designed for construction BIM tools and repurpose them as asset management tools has largely failed. That can be done often at an individual building level, but done at any type of scale, it gets very, very difficult. And most owners that we deal with have multiple buildings and multiple properties, multiple tenants, et cetera. So how do you achieve the quote-unquote BIM to FM mission at scale? I mean, how do you do this for someone that has 10, 15, 20, 400 properties, et cetera? How do you take this to scale? That's where our solution was sort of targeted at being that kind of universal kind of glue in the middle of all these tools that would allow that data to be ingested, visualized, and then served up into these new analytics tools. And we'll talk about some of the projects that we're doing in the course of this discussion to give you some specific examples as to how we do that.
Well, go ahead, Kenny.
No, I just, this is awesome. And I see it coming too. I see our master systems integrators and our systems integrators are becoming more and more aware of the intersection of technology and how they play a very important role, because they basically control the, the mechanical, the operational technology in a building, and we're connecting to the IT, structures. And some of the things that you had done that were extraordinary is, if I remember correctly, you also have the ability to apply sub-earth imaging too. Like the piping and all that stuff, wasn't that? So, in other words, you could provide a building with more than just the standard BIM model. You can also add other things to that, can't you?
That's right. It was designed to be kind of a, if you will, a digital Legoland that extends above and below ground.
Right. That's extraordinary.
And every object, whether it's I'm going to use a candy bar, but if this were a Lego piece, is connected to data. So as you move this piece from here to here, up or down, you move all of the data alongside it. And that allows us to continually re-scenarioize outcomes. The whole theory of our platform is drag and drop the BIM model with the data and then run a scenario. Drag and drop the BIM model, then run a scenario. So we get, for example, I'll give you, you talked about the underground tool. We're being used on the largest transit infrastructure project in the UK today. It's called the East-West Rail Project. Runs from Oxford to Cambridge. There are 30 different softwares being used in that product from Revit, Bentley Architecture. It's a whole bunch. And what they want is a single dashboard for the entire project from Oxford to Cambridge, 103 kilometers, and where all the consultants can drop all their models, all their 3D images, all the site engineers. Wow. So everybody can see everything all the time, everywhere. And it's unprecedented. And they're doing this now so that you have... The architect is W.S. Atkins. They're able to go in and manipulate these beautiful Bentley infrastructure models above and below ground. And we actually created what we call a site cut tool for them, which allows them to cut through the earth and look horizontally at what they're proposing. But the owners are also able to look at 3D JPEGs and, just all kinds of things that are, they would otherwise be completely blind to if they didn't get in the car and drive there and see it for themselves. So this type of visibility is really extraordinary. I think ultimately what a digital twin promises is not just the organization of data, but remote management. That's where all this is going. We ran a pilot last year. Eric, you and I talked about it with Cushman & Wakefield. And we, on a project in New York, we integrated 9 different subsystems, IoT sensors, 2 VMSs on 2 different floors, 3D VR models they had for equipment rooms, Matterport models, a whole, we had flat file databases with Excel spreadsheets and warranties and all kinds of boring stuff, but it was important, right? All this is brought into one digital twin. And it was a big success. It taught us that, A, this could be done, and that that the owner was just blown away to see all of his data in one place. Absolutely. I mean, to some extent, if some systems integrators are like Broadway actors, we'll put you on Hollywood. This technology puts your stuff into a movie, right? And the clients really resonate with it once they can see this data visualized so powerfully and connected to other data sets that they have. Their eyes open up to all possibilities. So we've been fortunate, and it's taught us that it's a perfect fit. Digital twin technology, ours or anybody else's, with what systems integrators do in doing the important collection and aggregation and the hard heavy lifting on the bottom end,
Well,
that, those two things coming together was a match made in heaven.
Well, yeah, and what it sounds like to me, and this is a distinction that, you know, is kind of subtle, but as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about, look, I can open my eyes, and I know you've got an art background, right? I can look at a piece of art, and I can see the colors or whatever, but I don't have the vision to make the distinctions. It sounds like what you're able to do is not just visualize it for people, but to give them a vision or a view that they might not see on their own, right?
Eric, that's right. I think people underestimate the business value of and the essential value of visualization and how important visualization plays a role in our lives and taking things that we don't understand in their native form and turning them into things that we understand in some other form. And by visualizing complex, for example, machine read information for pedestrian footfall data, which you may not be able to understand, but seeing it rendered as a heat map in a map that was of a neighborhood that you're familiar with, that communicates to you. And so what we're discovering is that the field of data visualization has been so underexplored in the building world, you know, and when you take information, you show it to an owner and say, here it is, it's kind of a dark red, which means you're in trouble. We need to look at it. And you know, and they see they can kind of get context for where they are in terms of, you know, we showed an owner once his Energy Star reports. So he could see all the Energy Star reports in the neighborhood. And he was actually concerned that he was ranking low among his neighbors and actually had one of the highest scores in the neighborhood. So, you know, what information does is when you bring it all together, not just here's my BMS system, which is very important to the to the mechanical operations of the building, but when you start taking that data, which is there, and combining it with the rest of the universe of data around the owner, it's a very powerful combination.
Well, it is, and you're going way past bar charts or pie charts or even, you know, pretty graphics that the wheels go around to tell you that the fan's running or whatever. I mean, this is blowing me away, and I've seen your stuff, and now I'm just really starting to grasp just how powerful it is because, I mean, there's a level of design that you guys have that really intuits. Like I can look at a picture of a heart in a book, a 2D rendering, right? Or you could take a visual journey inside the heart to see how it works. And that seems like that's what you guys are doing.
I'm wondering, are we able to, because we have a video here, are we able to share any type of video clip?
Yeah, you should be able to share the screen.
I could talk for 3 hours or show 2 minutes and they would say more. So, yeah. Andrew. Would you be able to share something from your screen? May I ask you to pull something up? I don't mean to hit you on the spot there, but Andrew Penny is our business development manager who is assisting me. And thank you very much, Andrew.
No problem. If you give me 10 seconds, I can have that up.
This is exciting. Why is bringing that up? So Chinese art, you studied Chinese art.
I did.
Now tell me about what interests you in Chinese art, because I'm very interested in Asian art myself.
So, I came out of Yale in 91. I had a double major in architecture and in art. And my last year at Yale, I worked as a small gallery that was on the campus where the curator was a big Chinese art enthusiast and exposed me to it. And when we held a show, this was in New Haven, where all these wonderful Chinese artists came and showed their work, and they all went to one particular school in China. And they said, if you really want to learn, you're going to have to go.
Nice.
And so as a young artist, I was more interested in kind of, as a younger professional, in building out less the business side. I think that comes kind of more naturally later as you evolve with your career. But I was interested really more in design and art at the time. And I went to study as I did in China for 2 years, and I'll never forget it.
well, there's an elegance, to Asian art that just is, I can totally see the correlation with architecture and streamline.
But Eric, I used to walk into class and we would spend 45 minutes just doing bamboo stalks. And then another 45 minutes just doing bamboo shoots. So that would go on for hours. I used to dream and see bamboo in my dreams at night. But the rigor of that gave me tremendous discipline, you know, and taught me a lot. It did connect back to architecture for me ultimately. So what a pleasure that was. And I think, yes, to your point, my background in art is a reason that today that the visualization of data, the beautiful the beautiful presentation of data is gosh darn important to me, right?
It's one of the things
that draws people in.
Well, it makes a lot of sense to me now because, again, you know, visually, you know, the first time Kenny and I saw it visually, it was just so stunning. There's an elegance to it that it makes sense. And we probably got to talk about Zen at some point in time or Taoism or something like that because there's got to be. So, but it looks like Andrew's got it pulled up here. So, Andy, if you want to hit it, we'll take a look.
Let me tell you what this is so you know what this is. This is we won a contract in December to deploy our technology across an entire city. So it's kind of a massive real estate project. And it's being designed by the same group that designed Singapore, believe it or not, over 100 years ago. And the main iconic buildings are done by London architect Norman Foster. So it's a wonderful project. And this project is starting from the beginning as a digital twin. So you're gonna see a very early stage model here, but some what their plans are, how this is being used to help them plan, and how ultimately it will be help them to manage their assets. So please pay attention about midway through. Andrew will pull it out. You're going to see us go to a property. We'll go inside the building. That's actually work we did with Cushman Wakefield. And that's where we really want to focus with you because that's where we think the systems integrators, that piece is for you. Okay, so Andrew, if you could just go ahead.
Sure. And you want the VO on this, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay.
Welcome to Amaravati, a new $6.5 billion world-class smart city capital for the Indian state of Andhra Pradesh. One of the world's most ambitious greenfield city undertakings, Amaravati is revolutionizing urban development, planning, operations, and citizen engagement at all levels across the new state capital. CityZen's Smart World Pro digital twin platform was selected to help transform Amaravati's vision into a reality. Smart World Pro allows users to see dynamic information about everything in Amaravati in a 3D digital twin of the entire city. Amaravati's digital twin consolidates hundreds of IoT systems and public databases into a single portal, giving users information from any file or format in real time, from IoT devices monitoring everything from construction progress to traffic, environmental conditions, public safety, asset data, energy consumption, maintenance information, occupancy rates, and profitability. Portfolio Overview provides a real-time summary of the performance of all of your portfolio properties. See aggregated alerts generated in real-time by building.
Nice.
Zoom in to a single property to investigate alerts, tasks, and major equipment monitors floor by floor.
This is the Cushman work. This is the future for them.
Nice.
Visualize up-to-the-minute lease data by tenant, building, city, sub-region, or region. Guide you to specific data objects and alerts provided in real time by a diverse range of connected subsystems. Connected data objects include detailed 3D AR and VR models of mechanical equipment assets. Tag multiple documents to a single asset, including searchable work orders, product specifications, maintenance reports, warranties, and any other relevant files.
Cool. Very, very cool.
It also becomes a massive queryable, you know, hyper-connected inventory of everything, really.
I totally see that.
And we've been working, you know, to develop this, Eric, over the years. The integration list just continues to grow, you know. And it's been a gradual process of, you know, over many years, in fact, kind of bringing all this together.
So you can integrate all the work orders, the work completion rates and stuff like that.
That's right.
And is this visible? I meant you can make certain parts that's visible to the owner user, because not the CTO or the, you know, they obviously would have it, but like the tenants could be excited about this too. They could.
That's right. We're working now with a couple of our clients on a web version of this. This is a desktop version that runs on a game engine called Unity. It's pretty highly performant, like a high performance video game. And we have a web version, which is much, it's kind of Smart World light, but it's what the clients want. It's a, you know, just show me what I need to see type of tool, much less feature rich, but very informative. And yes, that it's connected to the two instances of the same user engagement. So yes, the clients and the tenants ultimately are going to be the big benefactors here.
No, this is awesome. So Michael, look, I know you've been able to scale this thing up where you can control whole cities, for crying out loud. My question is, how do you scale it down where it's, you know, our integrators that maybe have, you know, 10 or 15 clients or doing, you know, one or two buildings at a time. Does it scale down as well?
Looks like we're seeing it right now.
Yeah, looks like we are.
It does. We're we're doing a project out in the northeast of the country for a bank, starting with two properties, their headquarters and another one. And you know, their first use case is around space utilization. They do have a few dozen properties, but the scope is to take care of the ones of the greatest concern to them first, where they have the most data and they are in greatest need of pulling things into one tool. So we are, our typical starting point for clients is a small engagement of a building or two. And we recommend, in fact, that way going forward, you know, kind of figure it out on something smaller before you scale it. You'll have to, we've been talking to a lot of clients. I think a fair comment is that I'm not sure that in 2019, every building owner in America is ready for this. But I think a lot of the more progressive ones who have taken or adopted smart building strategies probably are. And they're certainly talking about it. So that's kind of a call you have to make in terms of, you know, that particular scale issue. But yes, it does scale down to, you know, even part of a building.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, listen, Michael, for our community out there, Michael, what are you looking for in terms of, because we obviously have a lot of integrators that listen, we have a lot of consulting engineers, we have a lot of owners that listen.
Right.
what's sort of the pathway for an integrator to get involved with your product?
Well, we just have, we receive direct incoming emails from systems integrators every day asking for a call. Saying, listen, this is what we do. What do you do? And we have a couple of projects in mind. Our client asked us about a digital twin thing, and we're not quite sure what to do with it, so we called you. And we do the same. Typically, we're actually, I think, helping some smaller systems integrators get into a new business line. And mm-hmm. the example would be this one in the Northeast I mentioned. This particular company focuses, a systems integrator focuses on data centers only. They're not very big. They're based in Illinois. They have a handful of clients, mostly in the, you know, Chicago metropolitan region, not really even outside. But they have some that, you know, historically are here and there that they've been serving for a while. And this is one. They want to create a managed services business that they can pull through, you know, a digital twin. They want to couple this with their, you know, core SI capability, which they deliver as part of a digital of a data center installation, and create a new business line which allows them to basically productize all the services that they've been providing into a new menu and create new services off of this idea. So they see digital twinning as another business stream for them, kind of an important additional revenue stream that adds new value to the client and new revenue to them.
You know, I might have a proposition for our community and for you too, Michael and Andy, if you guys would be interested in it. What I'm thinking is, you know, this is going to go out in the next couple of weeks. And if our community would be interested, if you guys would be interested, what might be kind of cool is maybe we can collect some email addresses. And if people are interested, maybe having, like, we could do like a Zoom meeting or a webinar almost, to talk about the business proposition. Is that something you guys might be interested in doing if people want to get more information and find out more about how to work together?
Yes. That'd be great. It'd be great to take questions and talk through, you know, more, have more of a technical conversation about how some of this works on the back end, and also talk about the business then. Because there's a number of companies that have come forward to us. The model seems to be the same in each case. We kind of clasp on to their solution, and it helps enable the productization of their solution, so it makes it a better product that they take to market because it has a new front end, which is awesome. But if the front end has been customized for them, so it doesn't look like anybody else's front end, and it does something unique. And the systems integrators that we are working with believe that this is going to help them to increase the number of customers they're able to attract, as well as their penetration into the customers that they have. So you know, we are seeing enough of these for me to believe that, you know, for me to believe that. Michael, and I would love to have that conversation and have another discussion with the interested integrators.
Well, to that point, Michael, we, like you said, there were certain contractors that specialize in data centers, or some that specialize in the health industry, you know, hospitals, and then you know, you have the bid spec work with schools and everything. To me, this technology is exposing to whole new realms of data. But more importantly, if you were able to integrate these things and make them presentable or available to first responders, fire departments, and you know, police, law enforcement folks. I mean, we're talking about the ability to be able to do instantaneous, you know, detection and you know, it would be, imagine if you pull up, like we saw a presentation with this, and those renderings you had where they knew the water pressure from all the fire hydrants, and you know, all this data would come out to the first responder and just give them, you know, the most amazing advantage and optimal, you know, operations at an emergency and stuff like that. Is this, I mean, is this all tying in, or is this like, is this what you see? In other words, I think we're going to see all this continue to move forward. 20 years from now, we're going to see your product being deployed, not, you know, could you do it like municipality-wise and of course, city-wise?
We do. Like, I mean, I'll tell you the honest answer to that question. Yeah, the answer is that you're absolutely right, that every city should have a digital twin that integrates its major critical systems into a tool like this for that very reason, so that the fire chief gives instructions, and you have marshals, heading to a site. They would be able to pull up drawings. They'd be able to pull up even IoT sensor data showing pedestrian footfall in and around the site, if that were relevant.
Well, they'd know where the people are.
They would be able to see the, you know, current wind data. That would be relevant in the case of a fire. They would be able to see what traffic's like. If we really got to the point where we were connected systems, then we would be remotely shutting traffic down to enable path for them. All that's possible. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen yet because of the fact that the way that cities are structured today, existing municipalities, the way in which they procure technology, it tends to be from an individual department level. There isn't really a means to acquire, quote unquote, a system of systems or a platform of platforms that we have seen really work. We've seen at most GIS systems, which are kind of a far cry from what's needed. However, with the new greenfield cities that aren't concerned about existing rules or the massive developments that are almost cities in and of themselves, they can do what they want. And they are exploring these things. So I think what's going to happen is some of these new greenfield major real estate projects and up to the scale of the city, smart campuses that you mentioned earlier, these are going to tell the cities how they should do things. And so I think the private sector here will lead ultimately. And I'm hoping that forward-thinking, you know, elected officials follow.
I see it. I think that, you know, these are helping, giving us the path, because again, it's a story, you know, and again, you just displayed technology that's probably, you know, it's a 30,000 feet technology that's coming in, and it's going to take a while to trickle down into the various sectors. But the call to the MSIs are real, because right now we're seeing disruption in our industry. We're seeing challenges from other technology providers. And if our master systems integrators don't get in and get into the IT side of this and offer, like you said, additional values and insights to people that, you know, make sense, you know, because, and, you know, the whole proprietary game's got to, you know, got to be spooned off of that and come into, you know, these major beneficial platforms that, you know, just make the whole world function better, you know, make everybody's jobs easier. But for us, we're looking at ways to get, you know, new channels, new products, new technologies that from a distributor side to a contractor side, we need to renew the opportunities that we have, because some of the old opportunities we have are being diminished or are being commoditized to the point where, so for a smart person, having an eye on this kind of technology makes sense. And one thing I have to say is that you're going to be down at RealCom IBCon, and you're going to be able to introduce it on a very close or intimate level, your concepts to people that go there. So talk about that to the point where, do they have to have an appointment or just stop by the booth? Where are you located?
We'll be at RealCom. They can just stop by. We're easy to find. We'll have a video, some of our new stuff running to share, and we'll talk about a lot of the work that we're doing. We've got a number of projects that we're going to profile and show what that looks like. And I'd be happy to. What I ask people to think about, you know, if they do come see us, is between now and then, think about, yeah, in your portfolio of work, you know, which project, building, and or client would be the best candidate for something like this? I say that to everyone I work with. And you know you've got one. You've got one client who is more progressive and more willing to try stuff and better positioned than others most of the time. So that's probably the client you want to try this out on first. In my experience, that picking the right client is like picking the right service provider. I mean, you got to make sure that they're as interested in achieving the kind of results that you are, and that they're ready to do it, enabled in a position to be able to do it. So if you can find the right clients, it shouldn't be too hard. That's how I think about that. So we're very pleased, we think, because we're just so happy with who we're working with. I mean, it's a pleasure to interact with the people that we do. They're all trying to help us, you know, effectively achieve this mission together. And as you think about this, think about, you know, in your own context, you know, what you think the best starting place would be, and then having a meeting will be even more productive.
No, agreed. So you guys will be at RealCom IBCon. The website is cityzenith.com. I get more information there, correct? I've been to your
website. That's right.
And it's worth a visit. And again, if you are interested, if you're any of our community is interested in maybe having us facilitate a webinar where questions get answered, just reach out in comments, give us your email address. We'll reach back out. We'll coordinate with Michael and Andy. To say I'm impressed would be an understatement. I'm blown away. I guess one final question for me, and then Kenny might have a final one, is sort of, because I can see our integrators going, wow, this is such cool stuff. I wonder if I would be able to do it. So an integrator, let's walk us through sort of the path. If an integrator reaches out and says, hey, I want to work together, I have one of these clients that wants to try it. Walk us through the process. What happens next? Do they go to training? Do you guys help them lay the project out? What happens?
We'll first talk then about the scope of the project. Couple of ways we do this. Most of the time, the integrators have what they need. We do have the ability to have a third-party digital twin assessment performed, which is done through partners of ours, a company called Intelligent Buildings. Many of you may know them. Actually work with them.
Tom and Rob,
we're working with them. And basically, we have worked with them to create something we call a digital twin assessment. And they do it. They go in and they look at what an owner has technologically and suggest a course of action that would maximize the value that they would get out of pursuing a digital twin strategy. So particularly, they take a particular cybersecurity angle. They like to give a cybersecurity assessment as part of that. So, but typically, we look at what's there. We set up a use case. We talk about some existing use cases that we have. And whether that's around space utilization or predictive maintenance or, you know, capital budget forecasting, et cetera, different use cases. And we zero in on the available data. And then we structure what we call a pilot, which is taking that building. We recreate the twin. We begin connecting that data both inside and around the building, as well as the SI's data. Via APR or however else that is piped to us, and then we work back and forth until we get a first instance up. It's very collaborative. It's not thrown over the wall. It is our engineers working with your engineers regularly until we get to this first instance, and that it becomes, you know, by the time the project is over, we'll have a fully fitted out twin that will be connected to all the data required that will visualize whatever the scope asked for and deliver a specific outcome. All of our projects have that in common. I'm not trying to be vague to the people on the call, but digital twins, they drive a lot of different types of value. They drive value to the architect and planner at the design stage. They drive value to the energy management professional. They drive value to the facilities manager, which is why use cases will proliferate. And that's one of the reasons that we have a scoping in the beginning. And we tell everyone that, hey, you're going to have 50 things this is going to do eventually, but start with these two, which are the most important to you and drive near-term value to you. That's how we take them down the digital twin path. So for that, we're hoping the actual execution of the model is quick, and we have something to show and something, you know, within a matter of weeks.
Fantastic. Well, listen, I think you guys are really on to something. Thank you so much for taking time to speak with our community today. And listen, we're going to keep in touch with you. That's okay. So we'll track the progress. We're connected. We're almost like digital twins, you and I now. So
well, and, we are. We're not too far apart from each other. Now, this is great. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I was very keen to talk to this community because in the last 6 to 12 months, as digital twins have become more mature, it's the people who are listening to this call who have been contacting us independently, that's why I wanted to take this time to try to reach out to people, you know, in a more effective way. So thank you very much, Eric.
Oh, you guys are welcome. You guys are welcome. There you go, City Zenith. Check them out.
Well, there you go, Kenny, man. I tell you what, man, Amsterdam is calling. I think we're going to the Vincent van Gogh Museum this afternoon and do some other stuff. So with that, we'll bid our audience an adieu. Be sure to subscribe to the Control Trends YouTube channel. Kenny and I will be live streaming as much as we can of this conference. If you can't be here, the second best thing is be on the live stream. It's basically, if you go to the controltrends.com site, okay, you'll see an icon for YouTube. You can click there. It'll take you to our YouTube channel. It's Control Trends Smart Building YouTube channel. Be sure to subscribe to that channel, and you can watch the live streams as we get going. So anything else before we hop off, Kenny?
Well, yeah, there's a host of keynote speakers, and they're going to be talking about one of the largest buildings that has been converted from a power station into a commercial enterprise building. And it's going to be a great success story. And we've got some other speakers that have taken technology. Again, we're seeing the IP controllers have been universally accepted now. It was brought to note last night that EZIO has had 15 years of an IP controller. It was one of the first, maybe the first controller on board. And now we're learning how the Europeans and some of the other people around the world are looking at taking these IP controllers directly to the IT. So it's IT controllers now. And it's a new concept. So it's something that you probably want to pay attention to.
Yeah, these guys are definitely trendsetters. So listen, dude, with that, remember, be bold, stay in control, and Kenny, I'll drink a beer in Amsterdam for you.
Indeed, Eric.
Indeed, Kenny Smyre.